Welcome to this Thursday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. On today's episode, we get advice on checking machinery before tree nut harvest with a report from Taylor Chalstrom. And Kylie Harlan will report on a return of the zero emission UTV program for ag businesses. I'll have a look at regional and national agricultural news, beginning with regional ag news right after this.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
It's another devastating year for wildfires in the West. The McKinney Fire in Northern California is now the largest of the year so far for the state. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration GOES West satellite caught sight of the fire's startling growth over the weekend. NOAA shared a time lapse of the fire from Saturday as seen by the Earth Watching satellite. The agency says the fire has shown extreme behavior and explosive growth. Bolthouse Farms has closed its acquisition of Evolution Fresh from Starbucks. The acquisition includes the brand, business, and employees supporting Evolution Fresh. By uniting the two powerhouse brands, Bolthouse Farms looks to further accelerate the company's leadership within the premium juice and refrigerated beverage categories in retail. Through this acquisition, Bolthouse Farms will expand its beverage offering from nutrient-dense plant-powered juices and smoothies to include the full lineup of Evolution Fresh's primary organic cold-pressed premium juices. Starbucks stores in the U.S. will continue to sell Evolution Fresh products. Bolthouse Farms is a portfolio company of Butterfly, a leading private equity firm that specializes in the food sector with a particular focus on high-growth on-trend categories. Through Bolthouse Farms, Evolution Fresh joins Butterfly's brand portfolio that includes the likes of Chosen Foods, Mary Ruth Organics, Orgain, and P. & Jerry's Organics. Terms of the transaction, which Starbucks and Bolthouse Farms have announced on May 24th, were not disclosed. For food service professionals to get people to eat more fruits and vegetables, they have to think big. At a panel at the International Fresh Produce Association's annual food service conference, they pondered many challenges confronting the food segment, and one major theme was creating systems and processes that give people greater access to high-quality fruits and vegetables. Michael Nishon, founder and chairman of Wholesome Wave, said innovation comes out of creative people in independent restaurants, but they are too small to create big changes in American consumers' consumption habits. He said he's a huge proponent in produce prescriptions, one of IFPA's recommendations to the Biden administration ahead of the September conference on food and hunger. Schools are another vehicle to reach large numbers of people, he said, as well as working with big food companies. He says you have to make food that is good for lots of people. Younger consumers want to know the story behind their food, so if they want the story, give them something to read. They market transparency and flavor. Bruce Taylor, CEO of Taylor Farms, said his company supplies many restaurant chains, and it constantly asks questions of its customers to see where demand is. One thing the company heard was a desire for fresher and more local produce, so Taylor Farms has invested in growing areas and processing facilities across the country. As far as innovation goes, the company challenges every employee to be creative and present ideas for improvements without fear of failure. Taylor said produce consumption won't rise because of low cost, but because of high quality and memorable eating experiences. He also said he supports the push for more government help in getting fruits and vegetables to consumers, whether through schools or SNAP or produce prescriptions. Just a reminder, a California Citrus Pest Management Field Day is coming up on August 11th. It is the second of two field days. All citrus growers and affiliates are invited and encouraged to attend the upcoming Citrus Pest Management Field Day event in Southern California. It is being hosted by the University of California. The event will take place in San Diego County. It will include presentations from prominent experts from the University of California on several citrus pest management topics, updates from the local county ag commissioner's office, regulatory updates presented by the Citrus Pest and Disease Prevention Division, and more. In addition, the field day will include an immersive scouting workshop to assist the industry on how to best inspect for and identify the Asian citrus ciliate on citrus plant material. It is free. Registration is required. You can register at citrusinsider.org. The last year, as well as a few before, presented unprecedented difficulties, both old and new, for those in the transportation and logistics industry. Traffic problems and congestion were already a challenge for drivers, especially in heavily traveled shipping lanes. Although highway infrastructure projects are underway across the country, helped by federal dollars, progress is slow and construction exacerbates the issue. Then the most recent Trucking Research Institute list of top 100 truck bottlenecks released in February. The top 10 included well-known pain points for truckers. I-95 and State Road 4 in Fort Lee, New Jersey was ranked as a top snarl for the fourth year in a row. The rest of the top 10 included major intersections in Cincinnati, Houston, Atlanta, Chicago, Los Angeles, Dallas, San Bernardino, and Chattanooga, a cross-section of the country. Above and beyond the usual transportation woes is the arrival of the COVID pandemic. It wreaked havoc in every corner of the supply chain, causing significant disruptions in the availability of key personnel from field to retail shelves, and further altered traffic and travel patterns. Next came climbing inflation and punishing fuel costs. A survey by logistics coordinator Coyote Logistics LLC identified several issues confronting carriers like never before, including sourcing reliable carrier capacity, racing to meet customer demands, keeping on top of new technologies, and improving on-time delivery. These factors complicate all the existing challenges, such as keeping maintenance costs down, coping with the unexpected and unpredictable shipping delays, poor communication across pain points, and staying on top of government regulations. Labor issues, of course, continue to plague the industry as a graying population of drivers has proven hard to replace. Younger workers are not willing to settle for low-wage jobs in a market with high demand for labor, and those who want to enter the field saw disrupted training and testing thanks to the coronavirus prevention measures. In turning back to ATRI, if we look at the organization's most recent critical issues in a trucking industry annual survey, the most vexing issues are not new challenges, but their placement and rise among ranking may surprise some. First, the availability of skilled drivers. Second, higher insurance rates and a wave of costly lawsuits. Third, no idle laws and the lack of parking. Fourth, traffic delays, shipping slowdowns, and detention of trucks at points. And fifth, the need for technicians and parts to maintain shipping fleets.
The Crop Consultant Conference returns on September 28th and 29th in Visalia, California. Co-hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and the Western Region Certified Crop Advisors Association, this two-day conference features two concurrent CE tracks for both PCAs and CCAs. Earn the DPR and CCA credits you need. Network on our trade show floor and join us in giving away scholarships and honorariums presented by Western Region CCA, including the CCA of the Year Award. Take advantage of early bird pricing for only $175. Price goes up after July 31st. Visit progressivecrop.com/conference.
Learn more about checking machinery before tree nut harvest with this report from Taylor Chalstrom.
Machinery inspections and maintenance need to be performed after this year's harvest in preparation for next year. And regardless of when in the off season this occurs, failing to carry out that critical work before next year's harvest begins may result in machine breakdowns and safety issues when downtime becomes costly. To prepare for a safe and efficient harvest that's right around the corner, Dusty Booth of Jackrabbit offered some 2022 harvest equipment preparedness tips. The objective is to ensure harvest machinery is in sound and safe working condition, to minimize downtime and increase efficiency during harvest, and to maintain a clean and tidy harvesting operation. He started with the engine.
Replacing the engine oil and filter, typically every 250 hours, a lot of people will put more than that in a season. And so they may have to change it twice within a season, but certainly before a season starts, you want to run fresh oil, fresh filters, especially true with the fuel system. A lot of times people put dirty fuel into these tanks when they're out in the field with dirty nozzles that hit the ground and then go straight into a tank. And so replacing engine fuel filters, the inline, the water fuel separator, primary engine fuel filters, all the fuel system filters are very important, because when they don't work, the engine doesn't work. It'll throw engine codes and bring your machine either to a halt or to a slow pace. And then you've got to diagnose which filter it is. If you don't know, it's a filter based on the code. And then you can spend a lot of downtime trying to track down the problem. And then if it's equipped with a Tier 4 final engine, with over 74 horsepower, you'll need to start looking after all the DEF systems. So there's a DEF dosing module that has a filter in it that gets dirt in it, because the same is true with the DEF system as it is the fuel, where dirty nozzles can be put into those tanks. And so the DEF dosing filter is something to be checking, as well as all the DEF lines to make sure that they're not cracked, or there's wires that are connected to them to measure the temperature. There's certain things with the tier four systems that require extra attention, more so than just the standard prior to DEF system or something under 74 horse that doesn't require DEF. So making sure all the fuel systems, the engine oil and oil filters, along with the DEF system is very important. And then also I'd like to point out that the after treatment that runs the DEF through it and the exhaust system, cracks in those connections or snags in maybe the wiring harness or something resting on an exhaust pipe, sometimes that happens. And when it does, it'll throw engine codes and it'll cause other problems. After inspecting all those systems, look at the engine itself. Inspect the engine belts for cracks or signs of wear. All the coolant lines, check the radiator for leaks to prevent overheating issues down the road. And then especially important, a lot of people overlook, is inspecting the engine mounts. The isolators will sometimes, especially if they've had a diesel fuel leak on them, well, the rubber will start to dissolve and that engine can actually start to rattle and move around in its location, which can cause the engine fan to hit the radiator shroud. And I've seen it happen several times. So you should definitely be looking after all those components on the engine.
Another important point of inspection on a machine is the hydraulic system. A basic visual inspection of the system for leaks and loose fittings or clamps is at least necessary. Nuts, bolts, and hydraulic fittings can also all come loose on harvest equipment, and it's important to inspect those points to make sure they are tight. However, Booth said he always starts with the hydraulic oil when inspecting.
Depending on the condition of the hydraulic oil, you may want to change it. Now, it's typically 1,000 hours, but again, in the ag industry, and especially in the tree nut industry where there's so much dust, that can change just depending on the quality of the oil. So you can have your oil tested. You can look at the color of it. There's several ways to really understand the condition of the oil, but typically it's 1,000 hours. But because of the dust in the hydraulic system that gets there, hydraulic oils have to be changed every season. Some of them will call out different hours, and you'll want to check with your manufacturer on when certain ones need to be changed. But I find it good practice, and it's cheap insurance, to just change those filters every year. You may not change the oil every year, but I would change all the filters on the machine every year. In the machines that are in the dust, especially. Another thing I recommend always do before you start is check for any leaks in the system, repair, because they're only going to get worse. So be checking valves, cylinder shaft seals, hydraulic motors. You never want that oil to be more than just sweating. If it starts to become a drip, it needs to be addressed. You don't want oil reaching the ground, and you certainly don't want it in any area where the nuts are going to be. So fix any leaks that you have. Also, a lot of the hydraulics these days, and it just depends on the circuit, but a lot of the hydraulic valves are actuated through electronics. And so you'll be wanting to check all those connectors pre-harvest, make sure that the wires are in good condition. They're not snagged. They haven't been maybe pulled by a hydraulic hose that moves that it might be tied to. So always be checking the electrical connectors that control these valves. And if you're qualified, something I do recommend each year is to be doing pressure tests on the drive pumps. So there's gear pumps and hydrostat pumps that, you know, drive the cylinders and drive the wheels of these machines. And as those pumps start to wear out, you start losing performance that can slow your harvest down, can slow the movement of machines down. It can make it to where maybe they don't grab the tree shaker may not be able to clamp or shake right because the motor that runs the shake weights is leaking internally. So if you're qualified, check all the pressure. If you're not, and the machine is, you know, starting to age and you're starting to wonder if it's losing performance, maybe, you know, make a phone call to your local dealer or manufacturer of that product to have them come out and test the pumps.
Another seemingly obvious check on harvest equipment is doing an actual safety check on the entire machine, making sure the equipment poses no risk to drivers, whether that's an employee, a family member, or yourself. From a manufacturer perspective, Booth cites equipment decals, making sure they're readable and clear, as an important aspect.
They've been damaged or faded, call the factory or the dealer and have those labels replaced. That's very important. And then walk around the machine make sure all the systems function as they should, starting with, let's say, the electrical system. Make sure that all the safety and work lights are working properly so they can be seen through the dust or if they're working at night. Any safety lockouts, horns, backup alarms, operator presence switches to make sure that this machine can't operate unless the person's in the seat. Just all those safety things that make sure that the machine can be seen and be used safely. If the machine has a cab for the operator, the AC system, if it's 110 degrees outside and they're operating and that AC system isn't up to par, that operator is going to get very hot inside that cab very quick and exhaustion can set in. So make sure the AC system's working properly for safety. Tires, see it all the time. Make sure they don't have holes that have been repaired that don't look like they're holding anymore, or cracks in the tread. If the tread's worn out, if you see the sidewall starting to look dry and brittle, because you don't want an unexpected blowout. Some of these machines can travel up to 35 miles an hour in the orchard. And so having a tire unexpectedly fail could, you know, cause some damage or injury. And then the suspension systems to these machines. Now, some operate at a very slow rate of speed and don't have suspension, but others do, such as the shuttles. I'd be checking for worn ball joints, bushings, shocks, springs, anything that could cause the machine to not steer properly or could break and cause an accident.
One other major aspect to consider is, while important, you're not only trying to protect the user by inspecting the machine, you're also trying to protect the tree during harvest.
If the steering system, the braking system, the propulsion system, if they haven't been serviced or inspected, the result could be that the machine could turn unexpectedly or roll down a hill when they've actually, you know, got out of the machine, or drive unexpectedly if the propulsion system has got a bug in it or something's not working right. So all those things could cause a machine to either unexpectedly run into a tree or roll away and crash into whatever is in its path. With the shaker pads, if they don't have the lubricant, so there's several ways to keep the pads cool, but if they're not flushing water through the slips over the pillow pads on the shaker, they can get very hot and stick and they won't shift when they're shaking the tree, and that can bark the tree and damage the tree very badly.
One other thing, if a part needs to be replaced on the machine, make sure to not wait till the last minute due to part shortages that we are still experiencing in 2022. For My Ag Life, I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
Do you know the nutrient use efficiency people? Yes, I'm talking about the folks at Verdesian Life Sciences that deliver crop insights and solutions so California crops grow to their full potential. From micros with a proprietary delivery system to solutions that help improve the uptake and assimilation of applied nutrients. Visit VLSCI.com to learn more about Verdesian solutions or to connect with a local representative right here in California.
The American Farm Bureau Federation is hosting an industry-wide forum on a federal milk marketing order October 14th through the 16th in Kansas City, Missouri. The forum was prompted by a call from Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack to get as many people involved in dairy as possible in one room to discuss solutions to the federal milk marketing order shortfalls. The forum will include panels on various aspects of the federal milk marketing order, followed by roundtable discussions structured to spur conversation among all parts of the dairy sector, but with a clear focus on farmers. Meaningful changes to the FMMO system are long overdue, according to AFBF President Zippy Duvall. He says even before COVID-19 highlighted how volatile milk prices and outdated milk pricing and pooling provisions were harming dairy farmers, it was clear that the FMMO system needs modernized to address consolidation and processing, shifting consumer preferences, and fluctuating trade demands. For information, log on to fb.org. The U.S. House has approved on a vote of 218 to 199 a massive package of bills to address the growing threat of wildfire and drought in the West. The measure includes 49 standalone bills from both Democrats and Republicans. It includes provisions to make permanent an increase in wildfire firefighter pay, lift a cap on a federal cost share for post-fire recovery funding, and authorize more than $1.5 billion for water infrastructure to help manage drought conditions. Republicans said the spending would not meaningfully improve fire prevention and called for allowing more logging to thin forests. There is a slight increase in producer sentiment despite rising costs and lower crop prices. Dr. Jim Minter with Purdue University has a full breakdown of the July 2022 Ag Economy Barometer.
Thanks for joining us for the Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer July 2022 survey results. I'm Jim Minter, Director of the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture, and I'm going to share with you the highlights of this month's survey results. The Ag Economy Barometer rose 6 points this month to a reading of 103 compared to 97 last month, but still well below where it was this time last year when the reading stood at 137. The small rise in the barometer was attributable to improvements in both the Index of Current Conditions, which rose 9 points to a reading of 109, and a small rise in the Index of Future Expectations, which rose just 4 points. If you look at the barometer, the Current Condition Index, and the Future Expectation Index, they're all down nearly 25% compared to this time last year. U.S. farmers remain concerned about a wide variety of issues, but especially higher input costs. In this month's survey, we asked them what their biggest concerns are for their farming operation in the upcoming year, and 42% of the respondents in our survey said higher input costs was their number one concern, followed by lower crop and/or livestock prices, rising interest rates, and even availability of inputs. The Farm Financial Performance Index actually rose 5 points this month to a reading of 88 compared to 83 last month, as farmers felt a little bit better about their current financial situation on their farming operation. But when we asked them about the future, 49% of the farmers in our survey said that they expected their farm operation to be financially worse off a year from now than it is today. The Farm Capital Investment Index remains mired in the mid-30s, essentially at its all-time lows. And we followed up and asked producers that responded negatively to the question that the index is based on, what is their primary reason that they think now is a bad time to make large investments in their farming operation? 44% of them said it was the increase in prices for farm machinery and new construction that was holding them back. For the second month in a row, the short-term farmland value expectation index declined 9 points. That index now down 18 points over the last 2 months and down 20% from its 2021 peak. Results from the short-term index stand in contrast to what we found when we asked producers about their five-year outlook. The long-term farmland value expectation index actually rose 9 points this month to a reading of 150, up from 141. That long-term index is only down 7% from its 2021 peak. We followed up with producers that said they expect farmland values to rise over the next 5 years and asked why they felt that way. And once again, the number one reason was non-farm investor demand followed by inflation. Those are the two primary reasons those producers expect farmland values to rise over the next 5 years. In this month's survey, for the second month in a row, we asked corn and soybean producers what they expect to see happen with respect to cash rental rates in 2023 versus 2022. 42% of the respondents in this survey said that cash rental rates are likely to rise in 2023 compared to 2022. But if you compare the results in July versus June, producers' expectations for the magnitude of the rise has moderated. Given the dramatic rise in crop input cost, we asked producers if they expect to change their crop mix in 2023 because of the rise in cost. 24% of the respondents in this month's survey said they do in fact expect to change their cropping mix in 2023. We followed up with those producers who said they plan to change their cropping mix and asked them what the biggest change was likely to be. And over half, 53% of them, said they've intended to plant more soybeans in 2023 than they did in 2022. That wraps up the highlights of this month's survey. The full report is available on our website, which is purdue.edu/agbarometer. And you can also get more details on our podcast, the Purdue Commercial AgCast, which is available on major podcast providers, and also at our website, purdue.edu/commercialag.
USA Rice and other industry leaders are pushing for the American government to get rid of trade barriers with Cuba and make it easier for U.S. rice exports to get to the island nation. Rice groups are members of the U.S. Agriculture Coalition for Cuba, a group that supports improving agricultural trade between the U.S. and Canada. USA Rice wants an administrative and legislative piecemeal approach to help ease the current restrictions on trade, travel, and financing so that Cuba can grow its economy and become a reliable importer of American rice again, according to USA Rice Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs, Peter Backman. Cuba is a major rice consumer and was once among the top markets for U.S. rice exports. USA Rice says Cuba has to bring in rice from Asia and South American countries. Cubans are struggling with food shortages and a lack of medicine, energy, and fuel. The sale prices for good cropland in rural America continue upward, reaching new high points in many states. Farmers National Company says the record sale prices continue to capture headlines, but there has generally been continued strength in the land market, with good cropland attracting the most attention from buyers. The upcoming months will set the trend in land prices, according to Randy Dickhoot, Senior Vice President of Real Estate Operations at Farmers National.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
Kylie Harlan joins us on the show next. She reports on the return of the zero-emission UTV program for ag businesses.
The San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District has recently announced their third round of funding for their zero-emission agricultural utility terrain vehicles program. Todd D. Young, Director of Grants and Incentives for the organization, explained more about the program's specifics and why it is important.
This program provides incentive funding for Valley Ag operations to replace existing utility terrain vehicles, or UTVs, that are used in agricultural settings and agricultural purposes with zero emission varieties. Generally, they're battery electric UTVs. So they're replacing either gasoline powered or diesel powered higher polluting pieces of equipment with this zero emission technology. The program itself offers up to 75% of the cost of the new equipment, up to a maximum of $13,500 per piece of equipment.
D. Young said this program, along with others, are a result of a positive and productive partnership with the agriculture industry within the San Joaquin Valley. He said that together, the two entities have worked hard to reduce emissions in the area.
This program is really a great partnership between the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District and the agricultural industry here in the San Joaquin Valley. The agricultural industry has been a great partner with us for many, many years in terms of reducing emissions from their equipment. For years, we've had programs that have reduced agricultural tractors, irrigation pump engines, diesel-powered equipment with new cleaner versions. This is one of the newer programs here at the Air District that we're operating that's really focusing on that zero emission technology. What we're finding is that in addition to some of the ag pump electrification projects we've done in the past, this is really the biggest step that we've been able to take with the ag industry to electrify their equipment or to go zero emissions, going from these, again, these higher polluting diesel pieces of equipment all the way down to zero emissions. So this is really a flagship program, and to see the response from the agricultural industry has just been, it's been overwhelming. It's been tremendous. They've really taken to this program very, very well. And have shown a willingness to step up and the agricultural industry to step up and do their part in helping the Valley reduce emissions.
Any agricultural operations located in the 8 Central Valley counties within the borders of the San Joaquin Valley Air District are eligible and encouraged to apply. D. Young walks us through how eligible agriculturalists can apply for this incentive program.
They would come to our website, which is www.valleyair.org. Go to the grants and incentives page from the main page, and then just click on the zero emission ag UTV program. And then fill out an application. They send it in. And then from there, we kind of go through the process of inspecting the old equipment, verifying the new equipment that they're purchasing is eligible, getting them a contract, and then they're free at that point then to go out and purchase their new equipment. And then after they've purchased their new equipment, we also verify that their old equipment is destroyed. That's a really key part of our program, is we want to make sure that these old higher polluting pieces of equipment don't linger in the valley and don't pop up somewhere else in the state or in the country. So we verify through physical inspections that these old high polluting pieces of equipment are actually destroyed and no longer eligible or no longer available to be operated.
Jamie Holt, Chief Communications Officer for the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District, emphasized the organization's ultimate goal for programs like the Zero Emission Agricultural UTV program, which is to produce innovative, sustainable, and economical strategies to reduce air pollution in the area.
The San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District is really committed to finding smart, environmentally friendly, and also economically feasible strategies to meet the really unmatched challenge that we have here in the Central Valley when it comes to air pollution, and making sure we have grant programs that are innovative and make sense to folks doing business in the Valley is one of those ways that we can do that.
This is Kylie Harlan reporting for My Ag Life.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.